Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf kuf mem dalet. Anyway, today we continue. So we're holding now at kuf mem dalet amud aleph, right at the bottom. And so remember that what we had yesterday, let's just maybe review the whole thing a little bit. We have three categories that we worked out of issues that have to do with shechita of perot. We have the perot that are always used for shechita. And that's the anavim and the zeitim. Now, so over there, Shmuel had told us yesterday that everybody's made it, even Reb Yudah's made it, on those perot, that they're definitely not allowed to be nischat. And since it's a deraisa, as we'll see, because of that, even if the mashkim were zovu mealehem, they would be usher, because we're concerned that you're going to come and you're going to possibly, even if you had originally set it aside for oichlin, but you may change your mind because that's a common usage. And therefore you'll say, oh, well, if it already started dripping grape juice, what the heck? I might as well make some wine from it. Then there's the other extreme. The other extreme would be, doesn't sound very extreme to us, but it used to be at that time. The other extreme would be, well, maybe let's take, for example, in our times, we're going to see later today. How about, oh my God, I was just going to say, let's take another extreme example, which is prunes. I just realized prune juice, like, that's major. Oh, well. But that's the extreme example that the Gemara, Rashi actually brings the language prunes in old French, he says it's called prunes. Okay, but anyway, imagine something that really, like, nobody would make any kind of juice out of. It's pretty hard to come up with that kind of thing today. But so that kind of thing, Shmuel-tainet, that even the Rabbanan would be made to Rabbi Yehuda, that if, in fact, it started dripping on its own, there is no chashash. And then we had the middle area. The middle area was pomegranate wine. Bedafka was called wine in the Gemara. And things that would be made from berries, which are so easy. I mean, they're all, you pick them and they already make you wet all over and they color your skin. That's something that people would actually squeeze just as a matter of course. So over there, that's where we had the machlokas between Shmuel and the Rabbanan, if they were zavu me'alehem. And according to Rabbanan, it would be aser. And according to Shmuel, according to Reb Yudah, the way Shmuel was learning it. So over there, that's the machlokas. And Reb Yudah would say it depends what your purpose was in the original setting them aside. Okay. So now we proved yesterday that part of that statement was right? Because we had the original braita that we brought as a proof to Shmuel, and we said, oh, so Ashkechan is where we're up to. So now we have identified a source for Reb Yehuda actually being moted to the Rabbanu B'Zeisiv HaNovim. Do we have a source that Shmuel is being semichan, that the Rabbanu are moted to Shmuel also in the other extreme, in level 3? Minolan. So the Gemara, yes, indeed, we do have such a source, because take a look at this braisa. The braisa says, so chatim, that you're allowed to squeeze. This means even lechatchila, you'd be allowed to squeeze prunes, or, I mean, even though we use the word prunes in Rashi, he certainly doesn't mean necessarily dried plums. He used to call plums prunes. So if you're talking about plums, you're talking about quince, you're talking about ozradin, which are these very small, apple-like kind of thing, those things are bichlal, not going to be used for squeezing. You can even squeeze them lechatchila. Wow. Yep. Because why could you possibly be squeezing lechatchila? Isn't it called disha? And, I mean, that's mamish, you're being mepharik. So what would be the point? So what we'll have to say is that if it's something that isn't generally used for drinking, this is the way Rashi seems to understand it. If it's not something that's usually used for drinking, and both parts, what we're calling the liquid part and the solid part, are the same food, so then it doesn't have a shame of being mepharik anything. All you did was like you cut it into pieces, right? So you cut into pieces, fine. So one piece is the piece that we're calling the juice, but it doesn't have a shame of juice because people don't view it as juice. They just view it as a different way of eating plums, so to speak. So because of that, a mefarik couldn't possibly apply to it, because the concept of a mefarik is you take one type of thing from another type of thing. So one thing would be the food, let's say the inner grain of the wheat, and the other thing would be the non-food, which would be the shell, the psolet, the chaff. Fine. We don't have that over here. So we don't have it. It doesn't even resemble dash, and therefore there would be no iser mefarik, which is a tolda of disha. That's how Lechora would have to understand this. Here means even lechatchila. And you can't do this when it comes to pomegranates. Okay, well, that's obvious. Because as we said, the whole point over here is that no one would see it as a liquid. And in fact, during the week, obviously, the people of that house, they would have maybe they even had a little business of selling pomegranate wine. So you see that people do squeeze that kind of thing. And because of that, there certainly would be a problem of dash. Okay. So you see from this brayta that if it's something that's on level 3, that people don't use it for their juice, so then you're even allowed to do it lechatchila. So, I mean, obviously, that would mean if you're allowed to do it lechatchila, that there would be no problem if it started oozing on its own. Yeah, I understand. But I asked you, bring me a proof that the Rabbonin are motivated to Rabbi Yehuda. How do you know that this is the Rabbonin? Maybe this is Rabbi Yehuda. Where does it say that the Rabbanan are Moda over here? I don't get it. You're missing the point, says the Gemara. Let it be Rabbi Yehuda. You think it makes a difference? There was no machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan ever about whether you're allowed to go right ahead and squeeze something, right? Did anybody say you can squeeze anything? No. So if according to Rabbi Yehuda, let's even say it's going according to Rabbi Yehuda, all of a sudden we find that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, yeah, you can even go and you can squeeze it. Why? Because it's not even considered to be a liquid. No, so you have any reason to think that the Rabbanan are going to argue on that? Where did you see this machlokas about that? The only machlokas that we had is whether it's likely that the person would be led astray into actually doing it. But the question whether you're mutter to actually do it, if Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter, it's just as likely that the Chachamim would say it's mutter because it's a whole different point. So if that's the case, even if it's Rabbi Yehuda, Emet Shamet or Rabbi Yehuda, what did Rabbi Yehuda say until now? The question was whether it's Yotsu Me'atzman, it came out on its own, whether you got to worry about it. Did he ever say Sochatim L'chatchila? Of course not. Elamait Lach L'meimar. So what are you going to answer? You're going to tell me, okay, but this is obviously a different case, because since it's level 3 fruit, and it's Labanei Shechita, so because it's even L'chatchila, you can go ahead and you could squeeze it. So why not say the Rabbanu would hold the same thing? You have absolutely no basis to say that there's a machlokas about this. So then even Afilatei Merabbanu came into Labanei Shechita, and here's the same thing. So for all intents and purposes, this is the Rabbanan, and therefore Shmuel is 100% backed by Brises in both directions. One Brises tells us, Rabbi Yehuda holds, you cannot utilize Zeitim v'anavim that had been set aside for food. Even if it's so, it wouldn't matter. Once they start to drip, even Rabbi Yehuda's mitzvah, you got to worry. And now we have another Brises that says, nobody seems to be concerned about prune juice, because that's not considered to be juice. Okay, so if that's the case, the Rabbanan would also be motivated to this. Shema Amina, and that is indeed QED. Now, one thing I didn't understand about the brice that you just brought, what's the business about the little story of Beit Menashe Bar Menachem? And who cares about Beit Menashe Bar Menachem? What are you bringing that in for? Strangely enough, Reb Nachman actually comes along and says, yep, we paskin like Beit Menashe Bar Menachem. What is that supposed to mean? He says, what do you mean we paskin? Omele Ravel or Menachem, what? Menashe Ben Menachem, you know, the pomegranate wine house, is that like one of the Tanoim in the Mishnah or the Brayta that you're saying the Halacha is like him? This is a guy that makes pomegranate juice. What are you telling me the Halacha is like him? I understand what you're talking about. He's not part of this discussion. And I know what you're going to tell me. Obviously, you're going to say, I don't mean the halacha is like him. I mean, the halacha is like the Tana, who said that you're not allowed to squeeze pomegranates because of the fact that he discovered that Menashe ben Menachem, the famous pomegranate wine house, does that kind of thing, right? And if he does, who cares? But just because one guy in the world has got himself a little business making pomegranate wine, so now all of a sudden we're going to say that's koveya the fact that pomegranates are used for wine. I mean, you always find somebody doing something with anything, for heaven's sakes. What does that prove? So I don't think Menashe ben Menachem, that's like Rubidi Alma, I'm assuming, right? Now that you've brought me an anecdote, so this is like the way people out there in the street. An anecdote? Yep, that proves it. Sure enough, Menashe ben Menachem markets pomegranate wine. That absolutely proves conclusively that pomegranates are for wine. It's exactly what you'd find on the internet today. What kind of stupid reasoning is that? Says the Gemara, yes, in this case, it really has to do with the question of the act of squeezing, which even one individual could be koveya. Let me explain it to you, okay? Because Lagabe defining the nature of mashke vis-a-vis ochlin. Now, that's what we're dealing with over here, right? Because the only reason that we're being machalic between pomegranates and prunes is because, as we said, the juice of the prune is just considered to be another way of eating the prune. Okay, so now, the thing that we would have to establish by pomegranate is not necessarily that it has the shame of a juice to create the chashash that now people are going to start squeezing it. That isn't the point. The only point that concerns me over here is to be able to characterize the pomegranate juice as being different than the prune juice. Now, in order to do that, take a look at this issue, okay? It's not. Hamakayem kotsim bekerem. A guy, he wants to grow thistles, okay? Because he's got some donkeys and they're going to be eating thistles. And it's very important to him to have a smile on Eeyore's face. So, Rabbi Elazar says, in doing that, you're basically growing kilayim. Why? Because maybe other people don't like thistles, but you want to grow the thistles. Okay, so because of that, it becomes kiloya kerem. Whereas Chachomim say, what are you talking about? Only things that normal people grow. Normal people don't grow thistles in the middle of a vineyard. So, So what indeed is the svara of Rabbi Elazar that one particular guy who's growing thistles is going to make it kiloya kerem? So it says, Rabbi Chanina, I'll explain to you what he's thinking. He holds that since in Saudi Arabia, people have thistles and they make whole fields for thistles because the camels love thistles and they have a lot of camels. And so because of that, you see that even if there's one particular place in the world that uses thistles, same thing is true for Menasher Ben Menachem. Like, come on. Saudi Arabia is a big place, you know? What does that have to do with one guy who's got a pomegranate wine shop? I don't understand. Mini Ira, you call that a proof? Darabia is an atra. And over here, Ochabot Lodaito Yitzchokol Adam, whereas over here, it's a meaningless thing that one particular guy anecdotally does this kind of stuff. It's absurd. And by the way, remember we had before, Tosis points out, that when we had this Gemara before, V'chibovo Ruba di Alma, that even a place is not considered to be Ruba di Alma. And Tosis brings a brilliant explanation of there being three levels in this issue. And he says the reason that in this case we're talking about Saudi Arabia is because if you're looking at a behavior that is not something that would have been a normal social behavior in another place, and it just happens to be that people do it, that indeed does not mean that something is considered to be a norm because there's one country that does it. But the point of growing thistles is simply because of the number of camels per inhabitant that they have in Saudi Arabia. Now, we don't have any camels like that in Germany, but if we did, we would also grow thistles. That's the point. So in other words, where there's a clear-cut explanation for the logistics that a society has evolved, so then, of course, we'll apply that all over. That's a whole different issue. It's a beautiful analysis. Maybe in that way, we could be machalic between the times that the Gemara says V'chi X is considered to be Ruba di Alma, even though it's all place. So anyway, let me explain a little bit better over here. It's not the way that you explained it. The point of Menashe Bar Menachem is that he understood it. Reb Nachman understood the whole sugya to be going like Reb Chisda. And Reb Chisda said like this. Reb Chisda says that if you squeeze beets, right, and you've got now your borscht. Now, there's lots of Hasidim who would hold that if you have a mikveh filled with borscht, it would certainly be a better mikveh than a mikveh filled with water, no? So they put the borscht into the mikveh. Now, the water starts looking like borscht. Can you go to a mikveh that looks like borscht? So Rav Chisda says, well, if you squeeze beets, you put it into the mikveh, and the mikveh changes its coloration, it's not a kosher mikveh anymore. Now, the question is, beets are not generally something that you squeeze. And that would mean, assuming, now this is an assumption, assuming that we would only be able to passel a mikveh with something that's considered to be a mashke. Can't passel a mikveh with something that doesn't have a shame mashke. So how in the world are you going to pasul the mikveh with it? So what you're going to have to say is that the very act of squeezing it is a chashivas that you gave it as a mashke, right? Because otherwise, why would it be pasul? So kiven the akshavino havele mashke. So if that's the case, then if you would squeeze the pomegranate for its juice, it would become a mashke because you were machshev it. So you see that even though maybe 99% of the world would not squeeze beets, nonetheless, if a guy does squeeze beets, that's super borscht. You don't even boil it. My gosh. So now you've got a super borscht. And that, by the way, if anybody's thinking business-wise, it's not a bad idea. So if you've got yourself over here, this super borscht, then you yourself are going to turn it into a shame mashke. So when the Braisa says that you're allowed to squeeze prunes and so on, so it's obviously not saying it that you're allowed to turn it into a juice in order to drink it. So therefore, the whole sugya doesn't make any sense. Memela, we have to understand that according to Reb Chista, when we were talking about squeezing, we did not mean that you're allowed to squeeze it for its juice. We meant that you're allowed to squeeze it because that would have made it for sure a mashke, right? Even if nobody else does it. Paul Raya from the mikveh. So therefore, what's the price of saying when it's telling me I can squeeze prunes? It's telling me that I'm trying to squeeze them in order to make them sweeter. Because if they're hard, they don't taste as good. They don't taste as sweet. As anybody who's eaten a hard plum can tell you. Once you've got some, the plum has become softer a little bit and it has more sweetness. Now, I'm not talking about over here to squeeze it for that purpose, right? So then the question is, why am I not allowed to squeeze even the pomegranates? Because if I'm not talking about taking it for a mashke, so what am I doing wrong in squeezing a pomegranate to make it sweeter? If the Braisa is talking about squeezing not for the purpose of the mashke, it's got to be a gzeira d'rabbanan. Okay, why did the Rabbanan make a gzeira on pomegranates and not on prunes? That's because of an Ashi Bar Menachem. So when the Rabbanan saw that there's this guy that's marketing pomegranate juice, they saw that, you know what? You have to be worried about the fact that if a guy is going to start squeezing pomegranates, he's going to get some nasty ideas in his brain because he remembers the ad that morning on TV for Menashe Bar Menachem's pomegranate juice. He's thinking to himself, wait a minute. Instead of just sweetening the pomegranate, what the heck? Let's go all the way, baby. And there he's going to squeeze the pomegranate. That's the point. The fact that the Rabbanan want to make a gzera based on something, you know, like one guy's ad, big deal. Okay, that's perfectly acceptable. We're not coming to define anything, right? So it's a totally different issue. But of course, it changes the whole sugya because nobody was ever matir according to this actual squeezing. Now, okay, so this is the way Rav Chista understands it. Rav Papa does not understand it that way. He says, the whole thing is a ridiculous question. You assumed that in order for something to pasul a mikveh, even b'shinui mar'eh, that it would have to have a din of a liquid, a mashke. Now, that doesn't mean a mashke like the shiva mashkin, obviously. The shiva mashkin or only the shiva mashkin. Certainly beet juice is not a shiva mashkin. We were even discussing it. Fine, but you think it has to be a liquid. And I tell you that's not the case. The halacha is that mishum dahavi dover she'eno simimeno mikveh l'chatchila v'chol dover she'eno simimeno mikveh l'chatchila posel atashinu b'shinui mar'eh. It's posel the mikveh. The point over here is that if you can't make a mikveh out of this substance, then that substance can pasul a mikveh if it turns it into a color that resembles that substance. It has nothing to do with whether the substance has some kind of technical definition as a mashke, which is what you were assuming. And therefore, this has nothing to do with our sugya, and there's no issue over here about what you were saying. And that means that there's no reason for us to assume that just because you squeeze a fruit, that makes it into a mashke. So in other words, obviously, he's not understanding the whole thing the way Reb Nachman was understanding, right? He understands it that we just were saying that here's an example of people that are using pomegranate juice. But he would never have said this thing. The halacha is like, you know, what he means is that, you see, it's a very popular thing. People make a business out of it, and they like pomegranate juice, and therefore we have a chashasha. And that's the simple way of understanding it. Okay, now, it happens to be that the question over here between Rav Chista and Rav Papa, namely, Do we say that in order to passel a mikveh, it would need to be defined as a mashke? Or do we say that anything that can't be used for a mikveh will passel a mikveh by discoloration? Actually happens to be a machlokas in the way we understand one of the Mishnahs in Mikvos. It's a machlokas, not Tanoim, it's a machlokas Amoroim, but it's a machlokas Amoroim and how to understand the Mishnah. Because in the Mishnah in Mikvos, it says, if into a mikveh falls yayin or chometz or mochal. Now, mochal is that the water that comes out of the olives that is not really yet oil. It's before we've actually had a chance to press the olive. We're going to see that there's three stages of mochal when we get into it. And it changes the coloration of the mikveh. All of these things passel the mikveh. Now, the Gemara asked there, I mean, when we were talking about this mikveh, this Mishnah, that who is the Tana that seems to hold that mochal is a mashke? Now note that this assumption, asking the question, who's the Tana that holds the mochal is a mashke, is making the same assumption that Rav Chisda made, right? Because it's saying the only way that we could pass the mikveh by turning its coloration into something resembling mochal would be if mochal itself is actually a mashke. But if you didn't hold it's a mashke, and it would just be another form of the ochlin, then it wouldn't be able to pass the mikveh, even if it did change the color of the mikveh. Okay, so then that means when we ask that question, we're automatically assuming Rav Chisda's logic, and Abaya buys into the question. And Abaya says it's going only according to Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov is the one who says that mochal is considered to be a mashke. And of course, there, when we're talking about the considered to be a mashke, it would be nogea, the question of whether it's mekabel tuma. Any mashke is mekabel tuma. Okay, so the question is mochal considered yet to be a mashke, or is it basically just the waste product of the olive? So the din over there is, says Rabbi Yaakov, that mochal is a mashke, and the only reason that they say that the mochal that comes out at the very beginning, now this is stage one mochal, that when you first take the olives, you put them into a vat, that there's a little bit of watery stuff that comes out. The reason that that's not considered to be a mashke is not because mochal is not a mashke, it's because the fisheino rotze bekiyumo. You don't want it there yet because it doesn't help you, it hurts you in processing the liquid. And because of that, if you're not happy that it exists, so it doesn't have a din of mashke. Rabbi Shimon says that you're wrong. Your basic assumption, Rabbi Yaakov, is wrong. A mochal is not a mashke at all. And why is it then that they say that the mochal that comes out from the ikul beit habad, now that is different. The ikul beit habad is the mochal that is coming out right before you are going to actually squeeze it to the bitter end, or even if it's sometimes it comes out afterwards, after you squeezed it. But in either event, it has gone through a long process of heating and getting the pressure of the other olives around it that are in the ikul beit habad. That is because it actually has oil mixed with it. There's no way that the olives in that state are going to leak just a watery substance. That watery substance has in it ef shalo below tzitzuchei shemen. And the tzitzuchei shemen obviously are shaykh to kabbalas tuma. But if there were a way that you could separate out the watery stuff from the oily stuff, then it wouldn't have been mekabel tuma, even at that stage, in my opinion. Okay, so then it's got to be Rabbi Yaakov, who holds that mochal is considered to be all along, is considered to be a real mashke. So then what would be the difference if I mean, they're both agreeing, halacha l'maisa, that the stuff at the beginning is not mekabel tuma, and the stuff at the end is mekabel tuma. It's just for different reasons. I mean, one holds it because it's mashke, and the other one holds it because it's got shemen mixed in it. But it boils down to the same thing, isn't it? No. The difference is in stage two mochal. We've been discussing the difference between stage one, which is where you first put it into a container, and then you've got something that's really watery. And then we've been talking about stage three, which is after it's already been sitting and it's been warmed for a while and there's the pressure of the olives against each other, which causes actual oil to come out. Here, the difference would be that we're talking about the ati batar itzatzta, the stuff which is stage two, the stuff that comes out, where it comes out again after you put the olives into a pressurized situation where they're all sitting on each other and they start to oxidize, soften, and warm. So over there, there you don't have actual shemen, but over there you do want this stuff to start coming out. And there is where we have a machlokes, Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon. This is very peripheral to us. What's important to us is the fact that Abaye accepted the fact that we need to find a Tana who holds Bochal is a mashke. Okay, so we have Abaye on one side who's approaching things the way Rav Chista was. Then we have Rava who says the whole question is ridiculous. Who cares whether it's a mashke? So he's agreeing with Rav Papa. And he's saying it's because it's a dovash eino sinim in a mikveh. And simply, anything that you can't make a mikveh from in the first place is posas ha-mikveh b'shinui mara, exactly what Rav Papa said. We see that this machlokas applied directly to the Mishnah and Tyrus and is not something that we're just making up over here. Anyway, Omer Yehuda Amar Shmuel, another issue is, and this is very nogea halakha l'maisa, just about every single Shabbat. Okay, you want to make a fresh salad. And part of making your fresh salad is you want to squeeze a lemon into the salad so you get fresh lemon juice. You don't want to buy that stuff that comes in a plastic lemon and pretends to be lemon juice, right? So you got a lemon, you're going to squeeze it. Can you squeeze a lemon into a salad? Aha. So now this is exactly what we're about to discuss over here. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, you are allowed, lechatchila, to even take a cluster of grapes, which is the max, right? Because that's like, that is stage three of like, well, be it issur d'oraisa, and you can squeeze it directly into a pot of food. There's even a machlokas rishonim whether there needs to be food in the pot of food. We paskin lechumra. There needs to be food in the pot of food. But the point is that if it's going into the pot, since it's clear at that moment that your only intent of getting this liquid is for it to ultimately be part of the food that you're going to be eating, because you're not cooking liquids in the pot, you're cooking meat in the pot, but you want to flavor the meat. Okay, so even if there isn't food, according to some, it would be okay. But certainly if you're squeezing it directly into your salad, or you're squeezing it directly onto food, then for sure it's not considered to be usur, but you can't do this into something that generally holds liquids like a kara. That already is too similar to what we said before. So again, the svara over here is the same svara. Mifarek is a told of dash is only where you're taking one type of thing out from another type of thing. If you, in fact, have turned the mashke that you're taking out of the grape into a food as opposed to a mashke, then you're just taking the grape in a particular form of concentrated grape, which is called grape juice, but which is not a juice the way you're using it. It's just a convenient way of getting lemon into your salad in a concentrate, which is called lemon juice. So then that means that you are not really being mifarek item A from item B. It's item A sub 1 and item A sub 2, and that's not considered to be dash. That's all. So it's the same exact svara. Amar Rav Chista, and you know what you can learn from that? Whoa. Because if Shmuel says you could do that, so Medivrei Rabbeinu Namad, you would be allowed to milk a goat. If you want to have some fresh milk in your oatmeal, now this is very important for Richie, okay? You want fresh goat milk in your oatmeal. The question is, can you do that on Shabbos? Actually, Tosis learns to talk about over on Yontif, but anyway, why, I'll explain to you in a moment, there'd be no problem because then the milk has the same din as the goat. But Tosif says, but wait a minute, a goat... A goat is not food on Shabbos because you can't eat it. It's going to need shechita and you're not able to shecht it. So how is the goat food the way that the milk is food? It should be at least the same as taking a kernel of wheat out of the chaff, which would be mefarik. Because of that, Tosef says it's got to be talking about yontev, where I could shecht the goat. And because of that, the goat is food. So now I'm taking out goat A, and I'm taking out goat A subprime 1. I'm taking it now out of the same thing. So it's just different types of material in the goat, you know. So there's meat goat, and there's milk goat, and so on and so forth. Very sweet. Okay, so that's the question. You'd be allowed to do this, but you can't put it into a bowl. Anyway, so what do you see from here? That Shmuel holds, Alma Kasava, Mashkeh bala ochel ochel. Apparently Shmuel holds that if you've got something which is a liquid but is being put into a solid food, then that is considered to be a food and you're not separating out two things. That is the yesod of what he's saying. Masiv Rami Bar Chama. So Rami Bar Chama says, what are you going to do, Shmuel, with the Mishnah in Tyrus? The Mishnah in Tyrus says that if a Zav milks a goat, then the milk is tame. Why? Because consider that as the Zav milks the goat, he does not come into contact with the milk, right? He's only coming into contact with the nipple on the udder. But what does he do? Anybody who's watched somebody being cholev, you know that you aim the milk, right? So you're going to, as you squeeze, if you've ever done milking, you'll note that as you squeeze, your hand comes down along the nipple and directs it into the container that's underneath the animal that you're milking. So in doing that, the zav is being mesit the chalav. And since he is moving it, so that's called hasata, and a zav is able to be mitame with tumas hesed. And it says over here that the milk is tame by definition. Now, doesn't it make a difference whether you're milking into a bowl or you're milking into a food? If you were milking directly into your oatmeal, and especially according to the shitas who hold it, there doesn't have to be oatmeal in the pot yet. You're just putting the milk into your oatmeal pot, and then you're going to boil up your oatmeal. I know that Richie's been switching to water lately because of the complications of the sugya, and I have been insisting to him that the milk is much, much better for his oatmeal and the farina, Richie. And this is definitely a clear raya from the sugya. It's got to stop this watery stuff that you've been eating. But anyway, but the idea over here is that if the Mishnah doesn't say that it makes a difference whether it's going into the oatmeal or it's going into a container for drinking, mashma, that it's considered to be a liquid. Why? Why not? I mean, and if it's a solid? No, because if you're going to tell me that it's considered to be a solid because it's going into the oatmeal, so that yam mashka bal ochlin is ochel, remember that you cannot be metame ochlin if it hasn't come into contact with a liquid, right? Okay, where did it come into contact with a liquid? Where is the heksher for it to be makabel tuma? So you see from here that we consider it to be a liquid and we do not consider it to be a solid. Brilliant, huh? It's really amazing. Absolutely unbelievable. Ah, so answers the Gemara, that's not a problem. Because remember we had this sugya before. In our last cycle, right before we started this one, Kiryom Rabbi Yochanan, B'tipam Luch Lechet Api Adad. The idea over here, that was talking about the case, of course, that we were so interested in and what happens if milk drips into a tanur, tameh, and so on, right? So over there, the question is, how did that milk become mukshar over there? And we said that it was mukshar if you didn't want it to be coming out, so then it wouldn't be considered to be a mashka. So how was it mukshar kabel tuma? It would be from the little bit, a little drop of milk on the nipple. Now remember, if you note the way that women normally nurse, there's first, in order to make things easy for the baby to suckle, they'll put a little bit or allow a little bit of milk that has started coming out before to stick around the nipple. That makes it easy for the baby to grab the nipple and to suck. Same thing is done by humans when they are milking animals. So they get a little bit of milk, and then they start the job of the milking. But now it's much easier because it's not dry. So because of that, that first little drop of milk is something that was wanted, and it was muluch lechet al piyadad. You actually spread it over the nipple, and because of that, for sure that's considered to be a mashkin, and that's going to be machshir lekabel tuma. There's no shear in hechshir lekabel tuma. So the same thing would be true about the goat, and we'd be talking about the tipa muluch lechet al piyadad.